This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Gene and Chris, we're going to have a really, really fascinating trip down memory lane about stuff that still is being talked about. We're not talking, by the way, about the R word, which is Roswell, not Rendlesham. Although I think Rendlesham we've talked to death too. But some other things, we'll get to it later. But right now, I wanted to bring our listeners up to date about a couple of things. And one, we had this woman on a few weeks back, Cynthia Hart Button. And one of the things she did on the show was to give me a brief psychic reading that she expanded upon over a couple of minutes after the show ended. And I talked to Chris and I said I wasn't too impressed with her. But you know what? She did say certain things would happen to me, which I won't be specific about now, beyond the show, of a positive nature. And I'm seeing a little bit of that. Of course, I might have been in a situation where it can't get no worse. But that was positive. I can half believe something might be going on. And the reason I believe any of it at all is because years ago, when I was making a critical decision about my future and my future profession, I had a tarot card reading from a Wiccan woman in Philadelphia. And that set me on a very nice path. And then we revealed on After the Paracast that Chris is also a card reader. So would you like to work something out with our listeners sometime soon? I'm kind of putting you on the spot here.
Yeah, I'll think about it. It's been a while since I've done any readings.
You have to get back in practice. Is that something like a bicycle riding or something that you got to do it a few times?
It's more like operating a radio.
All right, well, it's a possibility. The other thing we did is, of course, we had Joshua Warren on the show. And some people like him. Some people think maybe he was pushing his stuff too much. And in connection with that, I got in touch with his partner who sells these Hieronymus boxes, wishing machines. And supposedly it helps focus your energy on the things you want. And so a few weeks ago, I set up one. It's here right now. It's plugged in everything. And I made a few wishes that you write down. And again, I don't want to jinx anything. I'll just say I saw some positive results. Have you ever tried one of those, Chris?
Nope. I never have.
Interested in trying it?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Sure, I'll give it a shot.
Let me get a hold of Joshua and have him fix you up with one of these devices.
Cool. I could always use a little good luck and magic and all that other kind of cool suspend your disbelief stuff.
I think things like this really rely on the individual. You control your own destiny in different ways, and most of us don't really have that much control. But if you can get through or break through a little bit, there's nothing wrong with that. So we'll see what happens. And I am, as you know, kind of the worst skeptic about a lot of things. So when something happens that might be positive, I'm going to say so. Now, I mentioned at the beginning that even as much as we don't like to always take trips down memory lane on the Paracast, sometimes things happen that are interesting. And so, for example, when the Paracast forums were first opened up in 2006, there was a thread there about one of the classic UFO contactees, George Adamski. And it kind of went dormant, like 11 years. And suddenly, someone heard an individual on a radio show who has a site now extolling the virtues of George Adamski and his contacts after all these years. And we had a brief discussion about that. Another one of those contactees was a guy named Dan Fry. And he had an organization called Understanding. And supposedly he had real experience being an engineer and a scientist or something like that. And one of the really knowledgeable people in our forums was looking over the stuff that Dan Fry wrote back in the 50s, and he said, you know what? This stuff is really good. There's a lot of factual basis for it. Not saying that this guy, Dan Fry, really contacted E.T. or anything, but he was writing about stuff that appeared to be authentic. And I thought, okay, we have people still interested in George Adamski. A very, very informative discussion in our forums about Daniel Fry. I recommend it, forum.theparacast.com. And so I thought of somebody, and Chris has a friend who was there in the old days and knew these contactees and knows where the bodies are buried, and that's Ray Stanford.
Yeah. That's true. Ray and his brother, Rex, his identical twin brother, spent quite a bit of time during their summers back in the mid to late 50s checking out all the abductees, George Hunt Williamson, Daniel Fry, Juman Bethrum, George Van Tassel, Adamski. The list goes on and on. There are quite a few contactees that most people haven't even heard of because they just didn't have the notoriety of the Big Five, but it's going to be fascinating. I just was just fascinated interviewing Ray for quite a number of times about the contactees and writing all this down. This will be published in a book, a biography on Ray, when he gives me permission. So we'll have to see when that'll be.
We have a couple of sample chapters up at Paracast Plus, by the way. So if you join Paracast Plus, check it out. Just get the beginnings of it there. But anyway, I wrote to Ray. You were there. What can you tell us? And he said, you know, I can't write it all down. But, you know, you want to interview me, I'll tell you the stories. And you know, Ray, when you can say something in 20 words, he'll say it in 50. So he'll give you every little detail of what these guys did, the stunts they pulled. But I'm very interested in asking him about Dan Fry now. If Dan Fry had the smarts about science, doesn't mean his other stuff was real. But it's something I guess we should look into, and maybe we could look again at these people long gone who made some pretty wacky claims, and most of us who were so-called serious, in quotes, researchers, dismissed them. Or if we were going to be charitable, we'd say, you know what, some of these people may have had experiences early on. And I say Adamski as one of those people. Didn't really know how to express those experiences. So when we had the flying saucer culture that came about after Kenneth Arnold's sighting in 1947 and the years that followed, they used the flying saucer meme to express these experiences in a way people would understand. It may not be what happened to them. They might not even know what happened to them. But maybe with the 15 minutes of fame, sometimes they take an experience and they extend it. Well, people want to know if they met E.T. again or whoever they were. So they will fabricate an experience. They'll tell the story. They'll tell it again and it gets more details. And that might be what happened here. You know, it may not be a literal trip around the moon or to a planet on the far side of the sun or something. It may be something weird.
Something weird. How can I top that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But do you ever think also that some of these contactees really had a genuine experience of some sort that they exaggerated?
I think it depends on the contactee. I think that works with some of them, but not all.
Who do you think might have had a real experience?
Well, you know, based on my limited research, really, into the contactees, I mean, I've read a few books. I think Adamski, early on, may have had some sightings. So, in fact, I think the first film that he took may have been real in some of the earliest photographs. Billy Meyer may have had some sort of sighting experience back in the 50s or 60s. I think when he was in India, someone may correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, go into more of this with Gene and Chris and Ray Stanford. You're in
the Paracast.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. If you go to store.theparacast.com, stop by and take a shopping tour.
When a storm causes power loss for a whole day, it can seem endless. There's a new kind of storm brewing, one that could target our nation's power grid and turn off the power for not just days, but for months or longer. Veteran news anchor Ted Koppel's new book, Lights Out, details this exact scenario. And CENTCOM General Lloyd Austin says it's not a question of if, but when. That's why Americans are rushing to secure solar-powered generators to provide an endless supply of life-saving electricity without gas, fumes, or noise. And the breakthrough Patriot Power Generator 1500 has it all. Portable and lightweight, providing up to 1,500 continuous watts of clean, quiet, and free renewable solar power. If a blackout strikes, you'll have power for heat, lights, cell phones and computers, and critical medical devices, all from the rechargeable solar power. Our first introduction sold out fast, and with high demand, we can't guarantee keeping the supply in stock. Stay protected with the power you need. The Patriot Power Generator 1500. Right now, enjoy our special easy pay option. Just go to blackout27.com. That's blackout27.com. Blackout27.com.
Did you know there's a new group of water contaminants with unknown health effects? These emerging contaminants lurking in your water may include prescription, over-the-counter drugs, and new types of herbicides and pesticides. ProPure's improved Pro-1G 2.0 filter meets NSF 401 standards to help reduce these emerging contaminants. To find out more, visit your authorized ProPure dealer or ProPureUSA.com. That's ProPureUSA.com.
Have you ever thought you'd like to flip houses but didn't know how or where to get the money? Are you ready to be your own boss so you can start living the good life? Hi, I'm Preston Neely. I used to be so broke. I had my electricity turned off 9 times, but I figured out a way to quit my job and find financial freedom in real estate. For a limited time, I want to send you a free copy of my smash hit selling book, How to Get Rich in Real Estate. It shows you how to copy exactly what I did so you can make money from the comfort of your own home without even doing any manual labor. I've already given away 5,000 books and they're going fast. To get one before they're gone, call 1-800-958-6936. Listen, if you're sick and tired of stressing about money, this book could change your life. It's short, fun to read, easy to understand, and awesome. To find out how to get your free book while supplies last, call 1-800-958-6936. Call 1-800-958-6936. 1-800-958-6936.
We use cell phones against our heads every day. But now, a landmark U.S. government study confirms increased health risks from exposure to EMF radiation emitted from these devices. The time to protect yourself is now. The solution is Defender Shield. Proudly made in the USA, Defender Shield blocks virtually 100% of EMF radiation emitted from cell phones, tablets, and laptops. Buy now at DefenderShield.com. Use discount code DEFENDER for 10% off. DefenderShield.com, the worldwide leader in EMF radiation protection.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special feature that we offer to Paracast listeners. It's called the Paracast Plus. And we give you an After the Paracast podcast. Isn't that terrific? After the Paracast podcast. And we give you the commercial-free version of this show and a lot more, including a couple of chapters from that book that Chris was talking about in the previous segment. More to come on that score also. And to join Paracast Plus, you go to plus, P-L-U-S dot, theparacast.com, plus dot. theparacast.com. The topic is the classic UFO contactees, those guys in the 50s who said they met E.T. They were from Venus, Saturn, and all these other places. And we've asked a guy who was there and met up with these people, Ray Stanford, to join us. Ray, welcome back.
Oh, hello, Gene. It's good to be here.
Hey, Ray. Welcome back.
Hi. Hi, Chris.
Now, as I was mentioning in our previous segment, Ray, before you joined us, people are still interested in George Adamski. And there was somebody going on radio shows, and it was offered to us at the Paracast. And he claims he knows that Adamski was telling the truth, and his evidence was real. What's the story? How did you come to meet George Adamski?
Oh, boy. Well, I'll tell you. I was, of course, when George Adamski came out with his claims, his book became available locally where I was living in Corpus Christi, Texas, on about October 13th, 14th, or 15th, 1953. And, of course, I was in an early year in high school, and I was very interested in UFOs, got inspired into it by Don Keel's writings. And so I heard about it. There was an article, I think, in the paper. And I went to the McInnes bookstore and bought a copy and read it. And as a naive teenager who didn't yet have his background in science, I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. And so the very next day, well, on the 15th of October, I decided to paint a better version of the picture that was on the front of Flying Saucers Have Landed, which was co-authored by Adamski and Desmond Leslie. And I painted a nice picture of what was on the front with more color to it, and really became a believer. And so I communicated with Adamski, and I don't remember how I got in touch, but back in those days, there was no email. It was all just hard copy letters, and had some nice communication with him, and got copies of all of his, in 8x10 copies from the original negatives of most of his major photographs that he claimed to have taken of craft. And it wasn't until later that I completely wised up to him. I mean, I was so taken in that I interpreted experiences I had with UFOs, multi-witness experiences, but we never saw anything like Adamski was describing, but I interpreted them in those terms, and thus I sort of cast myself in the role of a contactee. I thought of myself, well, I thought some of these were psi-mediated or somehow telepathically mediated. Later on, in my research with instruments, we found out that what I was really sensing was the extreme low-frequency magnetic field affecting a kind of euphoria, a false sense of well-being in you that had been misinterpreted as something telepathic or psychic from friendly space brother aliens. But anyway, the way I got to moving into it, I finally, when I graduated from high school in 1956, I went out to California and had my first meeting with Adamski, and had a series of meetings with him and visits there over the next, 56, 57, 58, may have been one in early 59. And that's where I learned what I learned about him and what he confessed to my brother and me.
All right. You say he confessed. What did he confess?
Well, shall I just go to that, or shall I kind of give you the conversation, the context of the conversation, what happened?
Let's go into the context of the conversation to give everybody a perspective.
Good. Okay. A friend of mine, Bob Matthews, and I and my twin brother had driven in from Texas, from Corpus Christi, Texas. And this is, of course, on the slopes of Mount Palomar, California, Southern California. And we arrived in there about – we had been Adamski knew me from first correspondence in the late 50s and then from several visits beginning in the summer of 1956. So, you know, I was not an unknown driving up in his driveway at about 11:15 or so at night, one night, when we drove in from Texas. And it was quite interesting. We didn't know where we were going to stay, but we drove up there. And so Lucy McGinnis, who was the one who was his secretary, came to the door and came out of the car and said, well, now you boys are going to have to go down the valley somewhere and find a place to stay. And Prof, as they called him, Adamski came to the door, and he said, oh, no. He said, come on, you guys come on in. You know, you can set up, you sleep up there in Lucy's office up there, up the hill. And well, that's the end of what we did. But That night, something very interesting happened. We were there, and I was, you know, was going near midnight, and we were sitting in the living room, a little house there where he and Alice Wells and Lucy McGinnis lived, and on the slopes of Palomar. And Adamski was telling us, he said, "Oh, you boys," he spoke in a strong Polish accent, "oh, boys, you should have been up here the other day. We were right up the side of the mountain here, above the mountain. There was a huge mothership. Oh, there, she was so big. Mr. and Mrs. Black from San Diego, they were here. They saw it, too. It was big as the side of the house. Hell, that's the closest I've ever been to one of them things. Well, I mean, except he went up inside." And my jaw probably kind of dropped, because inside the spaceships had already been published, and he had just said that was the closest he's ever been to one of them things. Well, except it went a minute inside. But anyway, we took the invitation and set up bedrolls up in Lucy's office up the hill, and spent the night. And the next morning, Rex and I went down to we were invited down to the Adamski was having breakfast. And he was sitting there having, as he called it, ek-nok, after ek-nok, prepared by Alice Wells. Now, I'm not prepared to say what was in the ek-nok, but I had a feeling that it was fairly well spiked.
Well, he didn't let you taste it.
No, he offered us to have some, but we didn't take it.
No ek-nok.
No ek-nok. And so, but he was just real friendly and nice that morning. And he said, "Oh, you boys, you know," well, the first thing he says is, "You know, you boys, you're too young to know what a son of a bitch that man Roosevelt was. Hell, the prohibition was a good thing for me. I forget it was sacred order or royal order, anyway, some order of Tibet going." And he says, "And I could make wine for a religious ceremony. And hell, you know, I was the biggest bootlegger in Southern California." "Oh, well, I mean, except, no, I'm sorry, I'm getting the wrong story." He says, "I was the biggest bootlegger in Southern California." And I said, "You mean you were making more than you needed in your ceremony?" "Oh, it is." He said, "We're doing really well. You know what, if it hadn't been for that man Roosevelt, I wouldn't have to get into all this saucy crap." That's his exact words. In that tone of voice.
Oh, boy. Okay, we're going to have more of this, including the priceless imitation of George Adamski from Ray Stanford. With Gene and Chris, you're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
It's called the Deep State. Barack Obama's most loyal aides still hold office, and they want to stop President Trump. Deep State was first revealed in the runaway New York Times bestseller, Big Agenda. David Horowitz's Big Agenda exposes Obama's government in exile and his shocking plan. Newsmax, Lou Dobbs, Ann Coulter all say you must read Big Agenda at bookstores everywhere, or check out our free offer. Call 800-NEWSMAX, 800-NEWSMAX, or go to BigAgenda411.com. That's BigAgenda411.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and slingbows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug-out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
Hi, Peter Porcaro for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up for free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, mysteries, ghosts, UFOs, and the afterlife, and so much more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people seeking a viable alternative to the other dating services. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and want to connect with people, use the code GEORGE for a substantial discount. Mark Rawlings, president of ParanormalDate.com, says so many people hunger to share their experiences about the paranormal, the unexplainable, or the afterlife, and so much more, and this is the source for them to meet and share that common interest. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. ParanormalDate.com. and use the code GEORGE if you decide to connect with someone you like.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-615-7709. That's 800-615-7709. 800-615-7709.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
This is Jacques Vallée, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, Remembrances of a Former Bootlegger, George Adamski, with Ray Stanford. Ray, please continue.
Okay, and by the way, I just mentioned that someone, possibly Rich Hyden, or someone anyway, did an investigation and said, well, the Adamskis, They never had a license to produce wine for religious ceremonies. Well, that doesn't mean anything. Adamski was a liar, and maybe they're producing a figure. If they ever got caught, they just say it was for ceremonies. I don't know. But anyway, he said he was the biggest bootlegger in Southern California or something like that. That didn't impress me, but I felt he was at least being honest. So then he got onto the subject of physical space visitors. He said, boys, you know, I never had to have any physical contact with the Space Brothers to know all about it. If you want to see the proof, go back up to the office there, to a bookshelf on the north side of Lucy's office there, and you'll find a book called Pioneers of Space. You read that, you'll see the same thing as inside the spaceships. He says, you see, I never had to have any contact with them, physical. It was all spiritual. It's a unified state of consciousness. And he said, that's how I know all these things. He's basically telling us, well, you know, guys, I really didn't meet these guys. I claimed them. You know, it was a psychic thing, I guess, is what he was claiming. And we thought it was odd that he was saying all of that. I mean, it just seemed odd because it seemed like that it was a kind of a confession that, you know, really he'd written that book, Pioneers of Space, years before. I have a copy of it here somewhere. It was kind of puzzling that he was making these statements. Well, shortly, he seemed to loosen up more with increasing equinox. And so he says, oh, you boys, well, let me backtrack a little bit here. In other visits, he had, the first thing we noticed first time I ever came up there in Lucy's office, there was a big, beautiful painting, over to where she would set her desk, would be to her right on the wall there, which I presume was probably the east wall. Some parts of it reminded me of something out of the Sistine Chapel. I mean, there's a pool of water, and there's a beautiful person leaning over there with the arm sticking out, kind of like you see as God's hand or whatever in the Sistine Chapel. But it was beautifully done. And I said, who did that painting? It's very nice. It was very, very competent. I mean, very, not only artistic, it was technically superb. And Lucy McKinney said, well, that prof did that years ago. And so, anyway, at some point we got to talking with him about his artistic ability. I think he brought up the subject. And in one of the visits, he told us, he said, you know, I'm not only good with the brush, but I'm good with the airbrush. And so he pulled out some paintings of nude women that he had done with the airbrush, or with the help of an airbrush. And they, too, were excellent. I mean, he had a really realistic touch even with the airbrush. So he kept stressing how good an artist he was. But anyway, that morning that he had told us about the bootlegging operation, he said, well, you know, boys, he went into the thing about that he didn't have to meet any space sisters physically. And then he said, I want to show you boys my laboratory. And so he took us down on the highway. This little house was elevated. The level we've been sitting on in the kitchen, for example, around the kitchen table, would be elevated. The let's say probably the south end of it is elevated above the ground. So when you went around that side of the house, there's a small space under the house that had a wall built there and a door, no windows. And he called it his workshop. And lo and behold, he took us down there, unlocked the door, and several things grabbed me immediately. Well, first place, to the left of the door on the floor was a good-sized canister that had very thick walls, I'd say, you know, another half inch or an inch thick. But it had a big sticker on the lid and the side that said Danger Radioactivity. It had the radioactive sign on it. And in the midst of the room, he had a bunch of little discs hanging from very thin, I guess it was probably like the leader used in catching fish, you catch your hook on to. It made little nylon filaments, I guess you'd say. And he had these little discs. The connection went right to the middle, and they're hanging horizontally. And he says, let me show you something. He closed the door, and the discs are glowing. And I recognized the pattern. It was the glowing pattern of discs that I had seen in his mothership photographs with the dark object. And lo and behold, I looked behind where this was. It was below it. It was a table-like thing. And falling down behind it was a big painting with a dark black mothership-like thing. That was there, that apparently had originally been behind these discs, where when you see them, you would think that was the mothership and these were the little saucers that were around it. Well, before I could even begin to collect my thoughts and my astonishment, Adamski took a screwdriver and pried open this lid, and the darn stuff is glowing. And I said, close that up. It says radioactive. Where did you get this? And he said, well, some scientists down from the Naval Laboratory down in, I think he said San Diego, they got it for me. He didn't tell me what he told them and why he wanted it. Now, when I told this to a guy that's done there's an online Adamski exposing book in Europe that written by a guy, and when I told him this, he insists, well, that this was just phosphorus. Well, I don't think it was just phosphorus, because I admit I haven't seen phosphorus containers, but I don't think they have that big radiation symbol on them and say danger radioactivity. I'll have to do a checking onto that. But whether it was phosphorus, whatever, it said it was radioactive and it glowed like crazy. I thought phosphorus, you had to expose it to light for a while and it absorbs light and then it re-emits it over a period of time. But the moment he opened this up, he had the door closed, he pried that open, and this thing is glowing like crazy. But basically, he was, he was showing us how he faked these, which then explained what I had seen one time when I was out at Van Tassel's Giant Rock, in the little place where you could buy food there called the Come On In that his wife ran. On the walls, he had some of Adamski's so-called mothership pictures. And one of them showed the black mothership all twisted up as if it had shrunk and warped. And what I believe is that Adamski took a series of pictures with the big camera he used to fake these things, and that he forgot that one of them, the thing had warped. It was the thing I saw there clearly had been painted on the side that was going to face the camera, but not painted on the other side. What this does, it allows the backside to absorb moisture, and so it curves forward. And unless you have it tacked up, you know, very flat and flush, straight and plain, that would explain the picture that I don't know why Van Tassel chose to have that particular one on his wall because it was the most obviously problematic picture of Adamski's mothership photos, not nearly as nice looking as the ones in the book, or which he had sent me 8x10 glossy copies of from his original negatives a couple of years before. But anyway, that's what we saw. And so here he had told us in within an hour's time that basically that apparently he never met any space visitors physically, but that he psyched this all out and wrote the book and took us down. And he'd been showing me what a good artist went, took it down and showed me, you know, how he faked these scout ship photographs with the mothership. And that's part of the expose of Adamski.
What's interesting to me here is why did he volunteer to you and your brother how he faked this
actually,
stuff?
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? This is the question that has dwelled on my mind all these years since. And the only rationale I can get is this. Let me backtrack a little bit. Adamski, yes, he was a con man. Yes, he was a liar. Yes, he made up these stories. I believe, though, at some level, he really believed that he had psyched this out and was telling the world something he thought was real, but tried to convince him with this and decided it wouldn't hurt if it made a little money on the side. But back in my very earliest communications with him when I was in high school, he kept telling me something quite interesting. It suggested to me maybe that he was a little psychic because I believe I'm a bit psychic. My grandmother certainly was, and I believe there are psychic phenomena. And when I was there at times, it's almost as if he would acquire out of my mind a question I was about to ask but was hesitant to ask, and he would come up with the answer or make some comment on what I was thinking.
More of Ray Stanford's remembrances of George Adamski and more with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Cancer categorizes over 100 diseases. Though we do not diagnose, treat, or cure cancer, GCN team is offering the Clemson University study where there was up to a 95% reduction in cancerous cells when exposed to a plant-derived mineral supplement. If you or a loved one are searching for answers to this horrifying disease, come to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. We'll email you a copy for free. That's 877-878-4203.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
Being self-reliant is about being prepared and to do what you need to have your own source of renewable energy. Portable Solar LLC offers the most powerful EMP-hardened solar system on the market that is transportable from place to place. And the best part? It's very affordable. Contact them at PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875. Sol Arc EMP-hardened solar generator, energy insurance for your family or business. Call Portable Solar LLC today or go to PortableSolarLLC.com to check out their patent-pending technology.
Are you happy washing your hands with harsh chemicals? Are you happy doing laundry with detergents? Are you happy paying high prices? Find your happiness with Pure Soap. These all-natural, earth-friendly Pure Soaps are the very best you've ever used. Buy in bulk. Get a 12, 36, or 48-month supply. Or get items individually and still save big. You're getting soap products twice as good as what you're using now. Earth-friendly and natural soaps. Your family deserves the best. Happiness is 5starsoap.com. Why not put your money up the drain for a change? See them at 5starsoap.com or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog. Cal Bend Soap Company can save you thousands of dollars and give you good old-fashioned real soaps that are triple concentrated. Soaps made from vegetable and coconut oils. See their full selection of soaps at 5starsoap.com. That's FiveStarSoap.com. Or call 1-800-340-7091 for a catalog.
Lifetime Graze 100% grass-fed beef has the health benefits you seek. When compared to conventional beef, it offers good fats while virtually eliminating the bad. That's the result of cattle who never eat grain, ever. Rich in antioxidants, including vitamin E, C, beta-carotene, and CLA. No artificial hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all our fresh, non-cooked products with only 100% grass-fed beef, go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to get 30% off your order. MidasResources.com or find us on Facebook.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book is from the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So, if George Adamski was reading you psychically, Ray Stanford, did he sense your skepticism or what?
Well, I don't know that. But let's go back to high school, the letter. In this letter, he said, Ray, keep this on the physical level. That made me think that he had some, at least unconscious knowledge that I might tend to get involved with the psychic side of this. That he was saying, no, keep this on the physical level. Basically, that was his mistake. It was all what he thought was psychic. And he's saying, I guess he's saying, don't get in the mess, you know, I put myself into. But he's telling me this showed me that there was a side of Adamski that was not all bad, that he cared for this young man and his brother and others he might be in contact with. And perhaps at some level, after he got to know me, especially from when I started corresponding with, I guess, in 54 or 55, I'm not sure, I'd have to check the letters, but finally to that final day when he exposed himself, I really think that he decided that this is only rationalization I can come up with. It might not be right, but I think it is. I hope it is. And he decided, look, here are these two twins. They're intelligent men with young men with good prospects for a future. Why don't I level with them? Nobody's going to believe them if they say otherwise that I even told them that. And let them straighten their lives out. Now, that's a compassionate interpretation of Adamski, which most people consider to be a worthless con man. But I think he had a more human, sensitive, caring side to him. And let me say, too, that I don't believe what I read in the writings of a certain so-called futurist from the UK, that Adamski was a fetterist feeding off young men. If he was, I never saw evidence of it. He never tried to touch me or my twin brother, and a lot of other people did out there in California, but he sure didn't. He never showed any of that to anybody that when we were around there. Sometimes there were other young people he was in contact with. I never saw anything that would suggest that to me.
But you can't say that about all the contactees.
No, I can't. Indeed, I could get on to Rick Williamson, for example.
Well, you know what? Let's move past that one. As far as Adamski, then, he shows you how he fakes his photos. Maybe he had some encounters early on. He wrote a book that even Ray Palmer had said he had seen, that to him demonstrated that Adamski was either reporting an earlier experience or just making it up.
Yes. Well, let me then go into what Rick Williamson told me related to that first so-called contact on the desert on November 20th.
Before you do that, that's George Hunt Williamson, folks. They called him Rick. Go ahead.
Right. Anyway, and I had a lot of exposure to Rick, a lot more than I prefer to have. But anyway, here's what Rick said. He became more and more dubious of what happened out there on the desert as time passed. Now, here's what he said. Before that date of November 20th, he was up at Adamski's, and Adamski, who was, Adamski, I should mention, for those that don't know, he was a so-called voice channel. he'd been channeling for years down at the headquarters of the organization. They used to have the Order of whatever, Order of Tibet, down in on the coast of California there. And I talked to a lady who had been present on numerous of his voice channels. But on this particular day, it was just a private thing up at the Damsky's. And I believe that the Baileys were there who co-authored the book Saucer Speak with Rick Williamson. And certainly Alice and Lucy were there. And Adamski, they may have been the only ones who were there, as far as I remember Rick saying. But on that day, something rather surprising came true. Whoever was speaking, I think Rick said it was supposed to be Adamski's Tibetan master. I do know that Adamski was wearing a crudely made silver ring that had a very crudely made face with a weird headgear on it. I asked him one day what it was, and he said, "That's my Tibetan master. I didn't ask him to explain that. But anyway, I believe that Rick said it was supposed to be Tibetan master, but he said that the Space Brothers were going to make contact with Prof. On the desert on the 20th, that Rick was to acquire some plaster Paris, because his face treasure is going to leave footprints. And there's never any explanation in the flying saucer that landed to why they had plaster Paris along, but that's the reason. It says, well, it does say in there that, he had advised the great anthropologist Rick Williamson to bring plaster Paris along in case there's anything they need to get a cast of. But actually, the truth of the matter is, it was voice channel that this visitor was going to actually leave footprints, and Rick was to make cast some, bring water, you know, to mix the plaster Paris with, and so on, and which is what he did. But Rick said that as far as what happened out there in the desert that day, as far as he's concerned, none of them saw the occupant. It says in the book, and it has a drawing that supposedly Alice Wells made of this supposed Orton, as he called him later, a visitor. Well, Rick said you could not see an occupant at all, that none of them ever saw that. It wasn't true. He said they saw one or two flashes, but he said that could well have been explained by the sunlight glinting off of a shiny model. And he said one could suspicion that because by the time when they met and went out there to the desert, there was one large corrugated box. And as he said, Prof said, nobody touched this box. Nobody touched this box. And so he says, that's mine. I'll touch it. So when they got out there, and Adamski said, well, he had the impression, you know, to go on over behind this hill. Why behind the hill? We'll hear that later, another come mine later. But he took this box with him. He took his telescope along and his tripod for it, but he carries his big box. Well, what's in there? It's far too big to just have the camera and the photo plates. It was good size. And Rick said he now pretty well suspicions that he had the model in there. He said he can't prove it, but that when Damsky came back, he had that box and nobody was still, you know, it was put in the back of the, I think it was either a 41 Ford or Mercury car that were in. It was put in the trunk, I think, and he never saw it again. Okay, that is suspicious sounding. And so I asked Rick about the book said in Flying Saucers Have Landed. It says that they saw what they thought was a mothership pass over with an orange spot on the side of it. He said, yes, they saw something kind of brilliant, good English sun. He said, however, that he would have to, in the mode in which he was in at that time, that yes, they interpreted it might be a mothership. But on the other hand, he said it could well have been a military aircraft, fairly large size military aircraft, just the side of the body glinting in the sunlight. And he said he didn't consider it unusual back in the 50s for some bright orange paint to have been put on the side for various reasons. They couldn't make out any insignia or anything like that. But it was some kind of an orange something. It could have been a wing tank or something. He didn't know. But that's what he told me. He said he had grown very dubious of what happened there on the desert. In fact, he told me that, I think it was the last time that I saw him, which was probably in 1959 on the California coast where we met down there in the LA area.
Well, right now, this, of course, kind of puts the lie to people who claim that Adamski was a real deal. Why do we still have people, though, that make that claim? Because a lot of the stuff
here, it does, and the thing is, let me mention one other aspect of this that some people may not know. When that happened on the desert, Adamski then gave Rick the photo plates. And he said, take them down to the, I think it was the Phoenix Gazette, and they can process them and publish them, you know, give them the story that contact's been made with extraterrestrials. And let me mention, too, that in that alleged contact, there was supposedly no English exchanged with this supposed Venusian. It was all supposedly symbolic language that he pointed out, that this was the planet between Earth and the sun, the next planet in toward the sun, and therefore reduced it with Venus. Strangely enough, when you read inside the spaceships, Orton is speaking perfect English and very good English. And so it's strange that he had to communicate with him in sign language. He forgot what he had said in the initial story, I guess. But anyway, Rick took the photo plates down to the Gazette, I guess it was, whatever paper. But they processed them. And Rick called Prof. Adamski on the phone and said, Prof., these things are so bad. He said, they're so carny looking. He said, I think they published one of them. I've never been able to gain an access copy of the issue of the paper. But he said, you know, these things is going to make everything look like these things are fake or something. They're bad, Prof. What shall I do with them? And Prof said immediately on the phone, burn the damn things. Burn the damn things. And I said, Rick said, well, this is the only evidence you have. He says, Rick, I'm going to get some better ones. Yeah, indeed he did.
We got so much more to come with Ray Stanford and Gene and Chris. We'll get, by the way, past Adamski into Dan Fry next. More to come. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
I'm Maria Brouse, Director of Media and Community Relations with Publix Supermarkets. Did you know that premature birth is the number one killer of babies in the United States? Or that survivors can face a lifetime of serious health problems? But you can help. Join me and Publix for the March for Babies Walk. We'll work together to raise funds for research and programs that help the March of Dimes fight premature birth and birth defects and improve the health of moms and babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots and, like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.